This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We also want to hear from you. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Be a part of Kenny Angola Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty here. And Chris, we got a lot of football we want to get to today. We had one of your former teams in primetime last night making a big-time statement, Lamar Jackson balling out the way he did. But
they made it a lot closer to comfort, though. I'm just saying, they didn't have to have all the drama at the end of that ball game. I thought it was going to be a nice, comfortable win. We had Tyler Fulgham on yesterday to kind of get us prepped for everything, and then all of a sudden we're talking about the Ravens having to have a come from behind win like that. I had my nerves all bad yesterday evening. I'm just telling you that, Gojo. Like, I was all nerves about Monday Night Football, but finally Lamar Jackson in overtime was able to take care of business.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson just continuing to erase any of those weird arguments people wanted to use against him in a lot of spots that are often done pretty disingenuously. We'll get into that. We will also get into the performance of the quarterback on the other side that Chris Canty is not necessarily sold on. Dan Orlovsky going to join us in a little bit on this show, our ESPN NFL analyst and former NFL quarterback, to help us out with all that. But Chris, the drama on the field last night, it felt secondary after a while when we got news at halftime of that game about the resignation of John Gruden. The now former Las Vegas Raiders head coach announced his resignation. It was made public on the team's Twitter account. Mark Davis echoing, saying, "I have accepted John Gruden's resignation as head coach for the Raiders." John Gruden putting out the statement, "I have resigned as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. I love the Raiders and do not want to be a distraction. Thank you to all the players, coaches, and staff and fans of Raider Nation. I'm sorry. I never meant to hurt anyone." Chris, this comes in the wake of the comments initially made by John Gruden using disparaging and racially charged language, referencing Demoris Smith, the head of the NFL Players Association, and then opened up to comments that he made about Roger Goodell, about female officials in the NFL, about Michael Sam, one of the first openly gay players to be drafted in the NFL, and a number of other things. I mean, Chris, he checked about every box of, you know, disgusting bigotry that you can in this situation here. And so now we kind of sit in the aftermath, Chris. What do we think comes next in all of this?
That's a great question, but to me, it was clear based on how everything unfolded and how the situation for John Gruden devolved. Like, you have to think that somebody that's privy to the material information from the investigation done on the Washington football team had an axe to grind when it came to John Gruden. It has to be, because you're talking about 650,000-plus pages of emails, and John Gruden gets singled out in all of this, and the stuff that's inflammatory that he said gets leaked out there, it gets brought to the forefront. They send it out to the Wall Street Journal. They send it out to the New York Times. Like, it's clear that there's somebody that has an issue with John Gruden, and they were taking an opportunity to settle some type of score. Not that John Gruden is a victim in any way, shape, or form. I think ultimately he got what he deserved. But based on how this whole thing unfolded, we talked about it on Friday's show and then again on Monday's show about what the NFL could potentially do, what their recourse would be, knowing that Gruden wasn't an employee of the league back in 2011 when these comments were made. And I think we saw what the NFL's approach to solving the problem was: to continue to put information out there, to continue to show the off-color comments that Gruden made, until it put enough pressure on the Vegas Raiders or John Gruden to step away in his current role.
Yeah, so, and putting that context, you're right, for everyone, from the New York Times report that was the impetus for a lot of this last night, the NFL and Roger Goodell had a team of executives looking at over 650,000 emails pertaining to their investigation surrounding the Washington football team. According to the New York Times, a review of these, a summary of these findings, was sent to Roger Goodell, and the league then sent the Raiders some of the emails written by John Gruden in this situation that got us to this point here. And Chris, you're right. This was going to be mounting pressure from whoever had leaked these emails and gotten these out to the press with John Gruden. And you're right, he got what he was going to be held accountable for in this situation. He took a blowtorch to basically everyone in this, and he made abundantly clear how he felt in this. And going back to his original apology, what we heard from John Gruden, and we can play it for you now, the Raiders' former head coach, in his press conference before last night, before the comments came around with the misogyny, with the homophobia, and with everything else in there. This was after the comments strictly made using racially charged language around DeMorris Smith from John Gruden.
I'm not going to rehash the event again. I think I feel very good about the things I have learned. I also feel really good about what I stand for, as I said yesterday. And I'll be happy to talk about football, but I'll just leave it at that.
And that's what you don't get to do in this situation, because, Chris, I'll continue to say, I think this is always going to be about what John Gruden said first and foremost, but John Gruden's response and what sounded almost like defiance there signaled to a lot of people this did not appear to be someone who was contrite for what they had said and done in the past. And so as this continued to mount, it made the decision pretty easy on everyone involved.
Yeah, I think you said it on Friday's show when it came to his response to that information being leaked. He should have been more contrite. He should have been apologetic. He should have also acknowledged that he has a lot of work to do in terms of regaining the trust of the communities that he offended, regaining the trust of the organization and the players that he's charged to lead. But he didn't take that approach. He decided that he wanted to be dismissive. And then when you had the second news dump from the New York Times on Monday afternoon, it becomes a situation now where he can't walk back any of those comments. And so, you know, if you took the approach of saying that you're going to take this opportunity to grow from the mistakes that you made in the past, to do the work, to actually try to mend fences with those marginalized communities, then maybe there's a chance for him to withstand the brunt of all of the emails that were leaked. But because he didn't take that approach, I think it left the Las Vegas Raiders no choice but to force his resignation. And this is a coach that Mark Davis decided that he was going to give a 10-year, $100 million contract to, and you're only in year four of that contract. So a lot of pressure on that organization, and I think they came to the only decision that they had, that they possibly could have, which is to cut ties with John Gruden.
Yeah, watching what happened along the way, too, like looking back at this, and I thought Dominique Foxworth brought this up earlier on Debatable. Like, he really did check every box in this, including pushing back on the notions and the improvements in player safety, the league's emphasis on concussion protocol. Like, he attacked every part of this, and what ended up happening on the back end was a couple of Raiders players, including Josh Jacobs, their running back, having to stand up in front of a podium and answer questions about this in a spot that should have been John Gruden and Mark Davis, period, there, instead of putting these guys out there in a spot to address something that they did not know about before that they only have such a limited sample with John Gruden of, to try and be a representative of that organization. It put those players in a bind as current players, and it certainly has put a number of former players in a position where now some feel like they've been betrayed and others feel like this is what they've known all along. Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, was on this morning, obviously someone who played for John Gruden back during his career, calling John Gruden what he has believed him to be all along, a phony.
I didn't know that John would say things like that and put them in an email. He just always been a fraud to me. He just always been a fraud to me. Never from day one, he's been a used car salesman. And people bought it because he inherited a championship team built by Tony Dungy and Rich McKay, and he came in there with a little bit of different energy than we had with Tony, and it kind of kicked us over the top to get our world championship, which I am grateful for. But at the same time, I also saw through who he was through that journey of getting a championship.
And Chris, that's probably a reminder for all of us on the outside, for everyone. And you've been in a ton of locker rooms here over the course of a long NFL career. What everyone sees on the outside and what you experience day to day on the inside colors a lot of our feelings about people. I always say trust is gained in drops and lost in buckets. And this is a situation where clearly you're hearing from Keyshawn, and he's one of many players who have played for John Gruden. But in his instance, what he saw on a daily basis just reinforced what we got here.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, John Gruden becomes a tough individual to try to defend, but prior to this last news dump on Monday evening, it was a situation where you had a lot of former players and a lot of people that John Gruden worked with within the football industry coming out to vouch for his character. Like, a lot of people are saying that some of the things that folks were suggesting over the weekend wasn't exactly who John Gruden was. I mean, people that he's worked with, people like Mike Tirico, folks that he's worked with on the Monday night broadcast, folks that he's worked with at other stops in his NFL coaching career, they were all coming out to say John Gruden is a good man, and they didn't think that this was an indication of the character, but come to find out, based on the emails that we saw, it is. I mean, you've got racism, you've got homophobia, you've got misogynistic attitudes and commentary. Like, it's just, it basically points to John Gruden being a trash individual. And I know that's strong language, but I don't know how you could say otherwise based on what we've seen from the emails that he had to Bruce Allen when he thought that, you know, that was in the context of a private conversation. So it's going to be tough for John Gruden moving forward in terms of, you know, what he does with his career. But you also have to think about the spot that puts the Vegas Raiders in terms of their coaching vacancy and what that organization has to do from a branding standpoint moving forward.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty here. We will get to plenty more with this later on, talking to Bomani Jones, host of The Right Time with Bomani Jones. But right now it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. As we welcome in on the Goodyear Hotline, our ESPN NFL analyst, Dan Orlovsky. Oh, we do not have Dan at this point? Oh, we've got Dan Orlovsky with us here on the Goodyear Hotline. And Dan, we certainly want to get into plenty of what we saw on the field last night with you and a couple of these quarterbacks, but we'd be remiss if we didn't touch base with you on what we heard and have seen from John Gruden since then. Dan, in your mind, was there any other way this ended but his resignation?
Oh, absolutely not, and I'm happy it came to that. You guys know, in this business, we're often told to criticize the performance, not the performer. The situation doesn't allow for that. What he did was wrong and stupid. It was dumb. Number one, I'm shocked by it. And maybe I am in the minority and naive. I'm shocked that a guy who spent his whole life in a locker room did not understand, because the locker room, as you guys know, exposes you to so many people that aren't like you, that don't think like you, that don't come from the same background as you, that don't look like you, that don't act like you. And I'm so shocked that being around an environment like that did not impact his mindset. I've thought about it a lot. My mind goes back to Peyton Manning's Hall of Fame speech. You guys remember, it was such a good speech. And when Peyton was talking about the game of football, and he was talking about the growth of the game and protecting the future of the game of football, and I think it's incumbent upon everybody from the past, the present and the future, when it comes to the game of football, to make sure that there's nothing nor anybody that is associated with the game that is going to negatively impact the growth and the impact of the game of football. And I think it's, you know, kind of sad that there are still coaches out there that will ask and demand things of their players that they won't ask nor demand of themselves. And that's not what a coach's job should be. And so no other choice.
Yeah, Dan, well said. And unfortunately, John Gruden's resignation kind of dominated the headlines when we had a really good football game on Monday night. And I want to get into that a little bit with you. And I know there's a lot of fanfare about what Lamar Jackson was able to do, and rightfully so, in the second half. In that overtime, he was outstanding. But I want to ask you about Carson Wentz's performance. To me, when I was watching it, it felt like it was the most underwhelming 400-yard passing game without any interceptions. It was one of the most underwhelming performances that I'd ever seen. So please explain to me what I'm missing when it comes to what Carson Wentz is doing with his team and how he impacts this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was the best he's looked since 2019. Now, 400 yards, 75 of them come from a third down screen pass. So, you know, 30 of them came from a check down. But still, one, you know, the ability to push the ball downfield. They've been lacking aggressive plays or explosive plays in their offense. The ball to Pittman, he gives him a shot as he's getting hit. The ball, driving the ball to the sideline, that was great. Some creativity in and out of the pocket. Again, not putting the ball in harm's way, not being careless and stupid with the football. You know, sometimes getting the ball out of his hands. And so I thought it was the best since 2019. Chris, candidly, like, I know they're 1-4, but if they get that version of Carson Wentz for the rest of the year, because their schedule gets a lot easier and they're going to get healthy here, they're going to still be in the mix. They'll still be in the conversation in December. So I like brutal loss, but if you're Indy walking away from the first month of the season, you feel really good of, okay, if this is the guy that we're going to get, and he's been trending that way, if this is the guy we're going to get, they got a shot.
Ken Engel Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to Dan Orlovsky on the Goodyear Hotline. Dan, on the other side, it was a tale of two halves. Lamar Jackson in the second half, incredible, lit him up, and they won a close game there. For that team, based on what you've seen so far, what's missing for them, or what do they need in order to go toe-to-toe with the team in the Cleveland Browns, who looks like they're on top of that division right now?
Yeah, I guess nothing. I mean, I wish I was better at my job to explain, but I guess nothing. Because, Mike, dude, you know this. If Lamar was playing great football, if he was playing great football, they would be a 2-3 team. They'd be 2-3 because that's what they should be. Well, the fact that they are 4-1 should not be happening. That it just does not happen in this league, man. You get decimated by injuries the way that they are decimated. You should not sit at 4-1. But I feel like Lamar is doing stuff that is really difficult to explain. It's really difficult to comprehend that one player is truly winning games, so to speak. I thought last night there was great anticipation throws. There was great pocket ownership. But the thing that blew my mind, or things that blew my mind in the second half, was one, there was a moment when he said, okay, this is going to become backyard football. You could just see it start to happen. He's going to go, I'm going to turn this into backyard football. Usually when that happens for a quarterback, one, you make mistakes, or two, you become less of a passer, and neither of them happened. He didn't make mistakes, and he kept keeping his eyes downfield. Like, he was using his legs, but then keep his eyes downfield. But the thing that blew my mind the most, or most impressed me, was the situational discipline he had. He would go on drives and plays of moving around and running around and creating and throwing and running outside of the pocket. But then when it needed it down in the red zone on goal to go situation, he hung in the pocket. 2 minute or 2 point play, hung in the pocket. Another touchdown, hung in the pocket. Like, just the situational discipline after all that running around and be like, nope, I got to sit in the pocket and let my guys work, was so impressive to me. And I mean, they should not be 4-1, but because of Lamar, they are.
That is the impressive work that we saw from Lamar Jackson. That is Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Dan, we appreciate you stopping by and getting us, drop some knowledge on us as it pertains to Carson Wentz and Lamar Jackson. We'll talk to you soon. All right, buddy?
Later, boys.
Awesome stuff. Again, you can catch Dan 4 o'clock Eastern every Monday through Friday as a part of that great NFL Live crew. We got plenty more football we can get into, but coming up next, we also got to head out and check in with one NBA team that finally drew a line in the sand. We will get to that after this word from 5-Hour Energy. All right, guys, what's your ultimate game day experience? Tricked out man cave, maybe deluxe tailgate. No matter your dream, enter the 5-Hour Energy football sweepstakes for a chance to win $10,000 and make your ultimate game day experience a reality. To enter, buy any 5-Hour Energy product and upload the receipt. It's that easy. The 5-Hour Energy football sweepstakes. Enter today. No purchase necessary. Must be 18 and a legal resident of the U.S. This ends December 10th, 2021. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit the number 5hesport.com. That's 5hesport.com. Void where prohibited. Kyrie Irving and the Nets at a standoff. Who blinks first? Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kane Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Pet protection comes free with auto collision coverage. Visit progressive.com. Mike Golick Jr. and Chris Canny. And Chris, we've talked a lot about Kyrie Irving because, well, so has everyone for the last year and a half. The guy is constantly wiling out. And I am actually stunned by the latest development in what's going on with the Brooklyn Nets, because Kyrie Irving, we believe, is unvaccinated based on the context clues we have in their situation, him not being in the building for media days, all these different things. Now the line has very much been drawn in the sand about Kyrie and his situation, the Brooklyn Nets putting out a statement essentially saying that Kyrie Irving will not be joining the team until he can be a full participant in all of their activities. This was their GM, Sean Marks, at the team press conference talking about the situation with Kyrie Irving and making it pretty clear.
Kyrie's made it clear that he has a choice in this matter, and it's ultimately going to be up to him what he decides. You know, we respect the fact that he has a choice and he can make his own and right to choose. As again, right now, what's best for the organization is the path that we're taking. And I don't want to speak for Kyrie. You know, at the right time, I'm sure he will address his feelings and you know what the path may be for him.
So, Chris, are you surprised that the Nets actually went ahead and drew the line in the sand on this one? Because it seems like a very clear directive at this point.
Yeah, I am a little bit surprised because the Nets being able to release this statement had to get the approval to sign off from James Harden and from Kevin Durant. And we know that Kevin Durant is a Brooklyn Net because a couple of years ago when both him and Kyrie were free agents, Kyrie decided that he was going to go to Brooklyn and Brooklyn welcomed him with open arms with without knowing whether or not KD would follow suit. And ultimately, they became the tandem that the Brooklyn Nets would build around. So, yeah, in order for the organization to take this stance with Kyrie, saying that they don't want any part-time guys, saying that they only want full-timers, guys that are all committed to the ultimate goal, then, yeah, it had to take Kevin Durant signing off on this one. And I'm a little bit surprised by this because it didn't feel like when Kyrie initially came out with his stance that would be what Kevin Durant ultimately did. So, yeah, this is a little bit of a pivot from KD and from the Nets organization as a whole. I'm surprised that it actually came to this at this point.
Yeah, we had heard it from Doug Brown in the update. Like, there's a mandate in this city that prevents this from happening, that prevents Kyrie Irving from being a part in an indoor gym and an indoor arena of this team's home games here. We know this is a guy that already had to miss a bunch of time last year, whether it was due to injury or personal reasons that we never got any more clarity on. And Chris, I think you're right in circling Kevin Durant on this, right? Because we knew he was here in large part because of Kyrie Irving. We knew most of the decisions in the NBA based around these organizations at least have the approval of these guys. Kyrie Irving seems like the kind of guy that would actually go through with this also, Chris. Like, that's the other part of this is I'd imagine at some point there's a realization that everyone along the way looked at this like we looked at the NFL situation or any of these other leagues where the rules for basketball, for the rules for football were made pretty clear. If you don't do this, life is going to be considerably more difficult for you to play basketball, to play football in the ways that you've been accustomed to. And so just practically, it would make a lot of sense. Practicalities doesn't seem to make much sense to Kyrie Irving. Like, this feels very much like the Ruby Thief from The Dark Knight, if anyone remembers that movie. No one knows what he is motivated by. Some people just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, I mean, Kyrie is a conspiracy theorist. He's a flat earther. He's a big thinker. And he's not going to be bullied into the popular opinion or, in this case, the stance that everybody should be vaccinated, even though the science tells us that that's what's in the best interest of our society. So, I mean, this is one of those situations where the organization is in a tough spot. And the only way that they were going to get relief is if Kevin Durant and James Harden both decided they were going to sign off on Josiah and Sean Marks being able to draw this line in the sand with Kyrie Irving and figure out whether or not he's going to be fully committed to this team's ultimate goal, which is trying to compete for a championship. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again, when it comes to the vaccine, as a player, there's no way you can reconcile doing everything it takes for your team to win with not getting vaccinated. I mean, we talked about the protocols. We talked about the possibility of introducing the virus to your locker room, potential breakthrough cases, and guys that aren't vaccinated, exposing other players that are to COVID. And it just doesn't make any sense in the grand scheme of things if you're trying to compete for a championship to have that in your locker room. So, I mean, when it comes to, the other two guys in the big three, it's clear to me that they made a stance against Kyrie's position and not wanting to get the vaccine because that could be something that's detrimental to them trying to enhance their legacies.
Kenny Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Chris, it did surprise me just because of what a position of power this team operates from. You had these guys play, a combined 17 minutes or 7 games, whatever it was last year, with that big three on the court before the postseason, where if it were not for injury, they looked like a buzzsaw capable of making this whole thing pretty not fun. And so I just figured, hey, Kyrie for half the games, better than Kyrie for none. none of the games. And for this team that's got Harden and Durant already, they'd have been good and in control on that if they wanted to proceed that way. This also feels like an acknowledgement that maybe the bigger picture was involved in here, because we had that little acknowledgement from James Harden. You know, I've never really done the whole free agency thing. I've never really put myself out there like that and didn't necessarily commit long term to a Brooklyn team that, like, Chris, if you still have James Harden and Kevin Durant, you have the best team in the Eastern Conference, in my mind, if these guys are healthy.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you still have an opportunity to contend at a championship level. And let's also keep in mind, Kevin Durant signed his contract extension this summer, so he's locked in. And for him, the idea of, you know, the inconsistency from Kyrie Irving and then the free agent status for James Harden after this season, like, that's a lot for Kevin Durant to look at and say, you know what, maybe we need some more security. Maybe we need to have some more clarity on the future of this roster and how James Harden and Kyrie Irving fit into that. And to me, Kevin Durant didn't want to risk potentially losing James Harden in free agency, entertaining the nonsense from Kyrie Irving. So I think that's kind of what it comes down to. Kyrie is entitled to make whatever decision he wants to make when it comes to the vaccine, but you also have to understand that Kevin Durant is trying to compete for a championship to enhance his legacy, and he's got to make decisions that are in his best interest in terms of his basketball future.
Yeah, I mean, they've talked so much about this team deserves, and they said Kyrie Irving, Sean Marks said it himself, the GM, Kyrie Irving deserves to not be half in or half out on all of this. There's some acknowledgement that, man, we've lived this headache before, and we're not going to do it again over something like the vaccine that we don't see being as big of an issue as it's being made in this spot. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line on this as well. Coming up next, though, we always like firsts in the world of sports. And so coming up next, we've got a first coming up, something that hasn't happened since 2004. We will tell you what that first is next, and we will do it after this word from 5-Hour Energy. All right, guys, did you hit the productivity wall after a big lunch? Well, let 5-Hour Energy Shots help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. With zero sugar and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for getting stuff done. Go to 5hourenergy.com today to find over 15 flavors to choose from. With flavors like watermelon, tropical burst, cherry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everybody. But if you're out and about, remember, you can always pick up a 5-Hour Energy Shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. What hasn't happened since 2003 that's getting ready to go down tonight? We will tell you next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
The biggest season ever.
The system is garbage. I've never liked it.
The very latest news, analysis, and plenty of opinions.
It puts up a lot of points. It wins nothing.
And it starts weekday mornings with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, and continues all day right here on ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Back snap, Brooks fakes the pitch, bounces it outside. He's to the 30. He's to the 25. He's to the 20. He's going to go. Kennedy Brooks, he just won. He just won the game. Kennedy Brooks just won OU Texas. A 33-yard touchdown run by Kennedy Brooks.
I hope no one threw the horns down. At the very least, there were children watching that game. That call, by the way, courtesy of Toby Rowland from Learfield. As Texas taking down Oklahoma was the celebratory moment of the week. This celebratory moment of the week was brought to you by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate. Championship savings for the win. It's Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And wait a minute. By God. Is that what I think it is? Oh! Oh, my God, yes! It is indeed. That's the NHL on ESPN's music, Chris Canty, because for the first time since the 2003-2004 season, the NHL is back on ESPN.
Hello!
Yes, sir.
Let's do that hockey, Gojo.
As I can say, it is really the return of, as we say in hockey, let's do that hockey, the Chance the Rapper SNL sketch. That line that will live in infamy. But it is also the return of our coverage of the NHL. Very excited for that one tonight. We got two great matchups. We have the Nightcap. It'll be 10:15 Eastern. The Vegas Golden Knights welcoming the Seattle Kraken into the NHL. But we got to head out now to the first broadcast. We have got the Penguins against the reigning defending Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning. And that is where Emily Kaplan, our ESPN NHL reporter, is going to be on the call tonight. And Emily, we just laid it all out here. Obviously, you worked with our close personal friend over here in Ryan Matlack for so long covering hockey. So just for you as a fan, as someone who covers this sport, how exciting is it to be, you know, not only having hockey back on our air, but to be a part of this tonight?
Yeah, well, as they say in hockey, let's do that hockey. You guys got it right down pat.
Let's do that hockey. No.
Yes, Chris, you're a hockey guy. No, we're all so pumped. I mean, you can feel it. It's palpable with the fans. It's palpable with players in the league. And, of course, it's palpable with us because, these, you guys know, there's so many puckheads at our company that have just been itching the last 17 years to get it back on the air. We're going to do things a little different. We're going to do a ton of storytelling. And I'm just obsessed with the sport, and I can't wait to share that enthusiasm with the crowd tonight.
Emily, looking forward to the season. The last couple of years have been pandemic-shortened seasons. Now the schedule is back to 82 games with normal conference and division alignments. Whose path to the Cup gets impacted most by the sport's return to normalcy?
Ooh, that's a great question. You know, I think Toronto Maple Leafs had it pretty good last year playing in that North Division because a lot of the Canadian teams were not very good and they just kind of beat up on them every game. But this year they're back in the Atlantic Division and it's the Tampa Bay Lightning who are the two-time Stanley Cup champs, the Boston Bruins, also the Florida Panthers are the team that everyone's picking this year as this like sleeper pick to make the Stanley Cup final. Honestly, if you're a casual fan or maybe you're a diehard fan, I'm telling you right now, the Battle of Florida, when Tampa Bay Lightning play those Florida Panthers, those are going to be the best games this year. There was 96 minutes combined in penalty minutes when they played in the preseason. So just wait till we get to the regular season because it's heavy hockey, but it's also really skilled hockey.
Yeah, that felt like a nice hangover from the last season as well here. The bad blood down there in Florida between those two teams has been a ton of fun to watch. Emily, big picture on this. Gary Bettman, the commissioner, was on with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, was all over the network this morning, and he mentioned the vaccination numbers, saying almost all of the league is vaccinated. I wanted to play this for you and for our listeners quick and get your response to this.
We have four players on the opening night roster who are not vaccinated. Not 4%, four players out of roughly 800. All of our officials are vaccinated, and all personnel who come in contact with our players have been vaccinated.
Emily, this is a big part of the conversation for every league's return to play. Was any part of you surprised that the NHL got to such high numbers?
A bit, because I know in talking to some guys, they were hesitant about getting the vax, but I do think that hockey is just such a team-oriented sport. No guy wants to be a distraction from the team. No guy wants to be the reason that their team's not playing, and I think that's the buy-in of why all of these guys did ultimately get vax. That said, we're not out of the clear yet, and you know, I'm here in Tampa. They're playing the Pittsburgh Penguins. They had two players test positive last week, Jake Gensel and Zach Aston-Reese, two good players for them. And they're not playing tonight because they just cleared protocol. They need to get back up. So we're still living in it. The Penguins, actually, because they had those two cases, have totally locked down. They're all wearing masks in the locker room. They're getting tested daily. So we're a very highly vaccinated league, but we're not quite a normalcy league yet.
Emily, continuing to preview the upcoming season, who are your favorites to win the Hart Trophy and the Vezina Trophy this year?
Okay, so Vezina is a kid up in Canada, but he's an American, and his name is Connor Hellebuck. He plays for the Winnipeg Jets. He's from Michigan. I just think he is one of the best goalies in the game. I think he's going to stand tall for that team, and I just think it's his year. As for the Hart Trophy, I mean, it's hard to pick against Connor McDavid, seeing what he did last year, but I think Nathan MacKinnon, the Colorado Avalanche, are so hungry this year. He just has this propensity to carry everybody else up with him. He's such a dynamic talent. You should have seen how pissed off he was after a fourth straight second-round exit this year. So I think he's going to take that anger into motivation and win the Hart.
There we go. You love to say, wow, take anger and motivation and win the Hart. That sounds like what we should all be looking to do at some point in our life. But what you should all be doing tonight, 7:30 on ESPN and ESPN Plus, is watching Emily Kaplan and the rest of our great crew on the broadcast for this game. Again, the Penguins the Penguins and the Tampa Bay Rays raising the banner on their Stanley Cup championship. Emily, enjoy tonight. It's going to be a blast. We're looking forward to it, and we're looking forward to talking to you plenty more as the season goes on here. Thanks, friend.
I love it. You guys are hockey guys. I'll talk to you anytime. Have a good one.
There we go. A couple of puckheads around here hanging out. Canty and Golic Jr., by the way, is brought to you by Goodyear, with you for every mile on the road to greatness. Goodyear, more driven. And we are excited. I mean, you guys have been around this time slot for a while. You've seen On Thin Ice, Ryan Matlack, one of our great producers, a lot of people that hockey matters a lot to them around here at ESPN. Excited for all of them to get their chance and get the opportunity to share the sport that they love with so many other people watching that love it that same way. Coming up next, though, we will revisit something that no one loved in the world of sports and in the NFL yesterday. More on John Gruden's removal next.